A fair system only works if there's an unbiased means of assessing merit, where there is no pride or selfishness involved, which means that fair systems cannot exist where people are involved.
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are a podcast that reviews and brings you all of Book Talk's most talked about and popular books and tells you whether or not you should fit them into your very busy schedule. I'm Catherine.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Casey. Today, we are reading a very popular fantasy book called Will of the Many by James Islington. So this is basically a fantasy retelling of ancient Greece. And it's, is it not ancient Greece?
Rome.
Oh, whatever. Ancient
it's
Rome.
Not ancient.
It's okay. Let me explain it. It's a dystopian society where everything is built off of a pyramid type hierarchy. It is very Greek and Roman inspired, but basically the lore of the book is that there is this giant catastrophe. Most of civilization dies. And the present day of the book is like basically the second world. So it's almost set as if this is like the future and Rome is happening again. But the characters, there's this like magic, but it's not magic. It's sort of like being able to use other people's life force. And so they harness the life force of other people in these pyramids, and the person at the top gets like a ton of life force, and the people of the bottom barely have any of their own life force. They have to give it up the pyramid. So that is all to say, our main character is a little lost king whose nation gets conquered by the hierarchy-based country. And he is sort of trying to fight against it in his own ways. And then he ends up getting kind of the offer of a lifetime to like train in this elite academy that trains the children of like the rich and famous higher ups in this society. He has a lot of moral quandary about what to do with this. He really does not want to sacrifice his own will, and he also does not want to take others' will. So that makes his life really complicated, and people start finding out his identity, and you can like leverage him to like force him to basically help all of these different groups in this society. And so he is trying to figure out how to survive, how to avoid taking part in this corrupt society, but also how to keep himself safe and do what he can to fight against it. And it's really complicated. And there is a lot that happens. It's a big book.
It's a thick book.
But yeah, you can tell by my description, it's a very complicated world.
Basically, it has everything the Busy Girls Book Club podcast loves: dark academia, complicated mm-hmm. political system, intense yep. world building, and a fantasy.
Yes. So yeah, first things first, as always, do you guys have reviews?
Yeah, I do. There's not really many funny reviews that I could find. Like, everyone's very, like, a lot of, like, philosophy in these reviews, like, going philosophical and looking into, it's a very deep book, so it makes sense. But, yeah, I normally like funny reviews. But anyway, I thought this one was cute, and I kind of agree with it, because I have the patience of a walnut. This is Jenny. She gave it 4 stars in Goodreads, and she said, I really need to stop starting series that are unfinished, because with that ending, I need the next book ASAP.
That is true.
I had a hard time, since I usually go to Storygraph, I had a really hard time finding anything under like 4 stars. So I have a 5-star review for you. This book has caused a major reading slump. Nothing has compared since I've read it, and I still think about this book every day.
I can see it.
High praise, yeah.
High praise.
So I pulled a 1-star review. This was, as y'all have said, the only funny review I could find. So here we go. Every dude who wants to write an epic saga about a lowly orphan with a secret past who goes on a quest to discover the truth and then hijinks ensue should be limited to a maximum of 400 words. Any more than that is just gasbaggery.
400 words. Jeez, that's not much.
This person wants to keep it tight. Though, of course, I feel like our threshold is extremely skewed from normal people's because we have just constantly read so many huge fantasy
books. Yeah, but 400 words is like 4 pages.
Yeah. No, that's not even 4 pages. That's a page.
Oh, I think she meant 400 pages. She must have written the wrong word.
I was like, 400 words. That's, you can't even set up a storyline there.
Yeah, that's like a,
that's a poem, honey.
A haiku.
Sorry, 400 pages, guys.
Okay. Yep, she's a long one, but super highly rated, like crazy highly rated. Goodreads, 4.6 out of 5. Amazon, 4.7 out of 5. I think Storygraph was like, let's see. Yeah, 4.61 out of 5. People really like this book.
Yeah.
What about
you? There were barely any low reviews.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to, for the most part, agree with the high ratings. I'm a little surprised the ratings are so high because the book is long. And one of the reasons it's not a perfect 5-star book for me is because I really felt like the first half of the book drags. However, I really thought the world was so unique. Like, I didn't even like necessarily love it that much, but it was just so complicated that I really felt like I had to give the writer props because he really pulled it off. Like, I really felt like the world building was very good and he made a complicated system easy to understand, and there is not a plot hole that I can find, and that is really fucking hard in these super complex magic systems. So he really won me over with that. There's one part later in the book that I also just hated, but it's like a small detail that I just cannot get over. But overall, I really liked the book. I mean, it was like reading something really unique, and yeah, there's a lot going on, and I really loved that. So I gave it a 4.5 out of 5.
Wow. Casey, we're on the same wavelength, because I also gave it a 4.5 out of 5. And for the same reasons, is because of the pacing. Yeah, like, I was like, I enjoy it, but it's not a book that you can pick up and put down easily. And it's also, like, you have to concentrate a bit, and it's long. It took me a while to finish this book, and that's saying something considering I can breeze through a book in a day. Like, fantasy books are my bread and butter, but this is such a different, unique world system. You have no basis for this. And I took Latin throughout like middle school and high school, so I already had like a basis in all they were talking about in the government system and the words. Like, I knew the words that they were saying, and I even had a hard time following at times, but I caught up to it. And as I caught up and as I got through the first like 50%, then I couldn't put it down because it was really just so much intrigue and so much amazing plots and amazing subplots and surprises and twists. So it really only gets knocked because of the pacing at the beginning.
Yeah.
I gave this 5 stars. This had, like you said, everything I love in a book, and I was able to overlook probably the same thing Casey had. There were just some convenient items towards the end, but otherwise the world building, immaculate, the magic system, perfectly complex. While it takes a while to explain, it is explained. I don't know, I liked it. I liked how, you know, everything the character had to face was, there was no right decision. It was kind of like, which one is best? And it was great. I loved it.
Yes. And he wasn't a true hero. He was someone who was put into this circumstance and is just trying to selfishly live, which is like any human.
Right.
Yes. Very believable main character. You guys know I go on and on about making characters make tough choices, and there were so many tough choices in this book.
All he is like, what, like 18 though?
Yeah.
Yeah. I have some complaints, but we can get into them in the spoiler section. But overall, I felt there were not a lot of cop-outs, and so I was happy.
And like you said, no plot holes. And I go searching for them plot holes. So.
So speaking of, is this book more plot or character driven?
I think it's definitely plot driven. I mean, our beloved MC is like definitely very disempowered. And the plot of the book is basically watching him try to deal with all of the different like powerful actors who are trying to get something from him. And so he's kind of juggling a lot of like demands and expectations, but he's definitely like at the mercy of the world that he's in.
Yeah. Yep. It's a totally mystery agree. Government intrigue plot. So he's like everyone else kind of knows a little bit of the plot, but he doesn't know anything. And then he has to try and figure it out. So it also adds in that like crime mystery element that we also like. So another element.
There's a lot going on, but it's all plot.
Okay. Have you or would you read other books by the author?
This author has another trilogy, I believe. However, I have not read it, but I will be reading the rest of this trilogy when it comes out.
Agreed. I because also have
holy cliffhanger.
Yeah, seriously. It says it's the Licinius trilogy or Licanius trilogy.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I haven't read that.
I haven't heard of them or his other books, but they are pretty highly rated. I wouldn't be against reading them. Even though this kind of is sci boy fantasy.
I was just thinking that. The reason I pushed it so hard is because I saw boys talking about it on Book Talk. I was like, yeah. Okay.
You're like, fine.
We need to do a few episodes for the boys.
I guess.
Girls will like it too, obviously.
Right. Yeah, we didn't mind it too much.
It's not like testosterone.
No. There's no smut.
There's no smut, yes.
But there's also no like veiled sexism, so that's pretty good.
Also true.
Yes. Complex female characters, we love them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Women in power, yes.
Women empowered.
Probably about as many female characters as male characters, so passes the smell test.
Okay, the big question. The question that probably scares a lot of people away. The pacing of the book.
Oof.
Yeah, I think this book took me 2 full weeks to read. And the first half of the book took probably like 3/4 of that. Like, I think I read the second half of the book in like 3 or 4 days. And then it took probably like 8 or 9 to read the first half. The first half is just a lot slower. It's not as focused on the mystery. It's a lot of like world building and lore, which is interesting, but it's just not super like fast paced. And there's a lot that you have to understand. And so I didn't think it was horrible. Like, I never wanted to quit. There was never a point at which I wanted to just not finish it, but it took me a while.
Yeah.
I felt like I read this quickly. However, when I look back, it says it took me almost a week. It's not a quick book. It's not.
It took me 2 weeks as well.
Because it explains such a complex society and magic system, I'm not mad. Like you said, the first bit is kind of slow, but like you're learning a lot. Mm-hmm. So I think it needed that time to build it up so that you understood when you got into the heat of things later in the book.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I don't think that there's anything I would cut from the book, honestly, even though it's so long.
Yeah.
But it's not one that you can just breeze through, because like we've read 800 pages in less than a week before with Sarah J. Maas and some other fantasy authors. But this one's so deep and in depth and unique that you can't just breeze through it as quickly as something that you already have like a baseline knowledge of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree with that. But I actually think the editor of this book did a good job.
Yes.
I feel like we've been railing against books like for a long time. Almost every book we've read, we've been like, I wish the editor had been a little more harsh. But this one, yeah, I feel like you could defend everything in it. So,
yeah, every scene either introduced you to a concept or a character. And so it was worth it.
Yeah. Well, that brings us to our busy girl readings.
No.
No.
Oh, sorry. Would you watch a movie or TV show of the book?
Yes.
Yeah. It'd have to be a TV show, though. You can't just do this in a movie.
Oh, my gosh.
Pretty epic.
It would be so epic. Them doing the maze. So, like, a big part of the book is manipulating a maze that they have to, like, compete in, like, an obstacle course. I would love to see it. I would love to watch a movie.
The mechanics of that would be crazy. And
it was giving Maze Runner.
Well, yeah.
It was.
Just that bit. It's just like, that's the kind of the maze I pictured in my head.
But the idea of a labyrinth comes from like Greek and Roman history. So it works.
Yeah.
No, it's just a moving maze mechanical. The movie that I compared to is Maze Runner.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Right. But I did love how this book incorporated so many of those like Greek Roman elements into the story so that it really did feel just so like he did a lot of research. I had to give him props.
Oh, yeah. He knew all back and forth the government systems of Rome.
Mm-hmm.
And Latin.
Yeah. No, I was surprised.
Words.
Yeah, the Latin words he was throwing out, I was like, I learned this in Latin 3. Like, dude, this is not basic Latin.
But if you've taken, like, world history, you at least have a base for the world building.
Yeah.
So everybody should sort of have a base. Also, if you're just a weird mythology nerd like us, it fit a lot of that. Or if you like reading, you know, retellings of ancient Greek or Roman myths, you at least know some of the words and world concepts.
Mm-hmm.
I just had an intrusive thought come into my brain, and I don't know if you guys thought about this, but this is literally came out around the same time of like, guys, how often do you think of the Roman Empire?
Yes. Like, I did see one review that said this book is my Roman Empire, and I was like, facts?
Yeah. Like, this was quite made literally for men.
It really was. This author thinks about the Roman Empire every day.
Yes.
Okay. Well, now we're at our busy girl rating.
No matter how much I like this book, and it's worth the read, it's like a 3. It's not a busy girl book. I had to make time for it. It takes some brain power and it's long, but it's worth the read. And I want to like push it up to like a 4, but it's a 3.
I'm going to say more like a 2. It's not easy. I mean, like, I loved it, but mm-hmm. it's not an easy thing to fit in your schedule. And like, mm-hmm. it's a lot.
It is. I will say my mom, who we frequently mention on this podcast, enjoyed it, but I don't think she's ever gone back to it since she started it because she just doesn't have time for it, which I think is fair. And so I think I'm also gonna give it a 3 just because I think it's worth the perseverance, but I just, there's definitely no way you can go higher than that.
No, but here's what I'll say. The whole time I was reading it and when I finished it, this is what I wanted from Babel.
Yes.
Yeah, I can see that.
And did not get.
It feels like I would probably recommend Babel at the end of this episode because it has a lot of the same principles, like long, complex magic system based somewhat in like a fictionalized version of like history in a time and a place that like did happen.
Colonialism,
like very heavy reliance on like very real, like real life themes. But yeah, I loved Babel. I gave it 5 stars, I think, but I would probably recommend this book before Babel.
Are you ready, Casey?
I'm so ready. It's a spoiler alert section.
Spoiler alert.
Spoilers.
Yeah, go read the book. Give it a shot, take a chance on it, and then come back and listen to us discuss it. All right. Well, first things first, I want to say, I put this in my Goodreads review. This author is so fucking lucky. I didn't take off entire points for the magical appearance of a wolf who just happens to totally destroy every obstacle in the way in like the last 50 pages of the book. I was like, what the fuck is this bullshit?
I knew that was coming from the moment, like because we had an entire scene dedicated to this baby wolf that he saves.
Yeah,
it was predictable. And then it came way harder than I thought it would even.
Yes.
I am only sort of forgiving because of like the Romulus Remus trope stuff. I understand.
It's truly based in Roman mythology.
However, really the main character should be dead.
Yeah,
no. But like then the book would just end. So, I mean, I get it. It felt very rushed as a cop out of it, just because we needed to get back to the main storyline. But also that was the main storyline. It's convoluted, but I kind of forgave it because cute puppy. But I'm very biased towards animals.
The only
consolation, though, he did lose his arm still.
Yeah, yes. He did. That was the only part of the book that made me really mad. And I was just like, are you fucking kidding? Like, please, you couldn't think of a single thing that would make this book like more interesting than just having a random animal who he interacted with one time come and magically save the day. I was like, oh, this is such horseshit.
Like, it's got to be a Father of Rome kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway. Speaking of Rome.
Yeah.
The Roman Empire is once again conquering the world, just in a different world. What did you think about the hierarchy and seating of will in the whole world building?
I loved it. I thought it was very, very convoluted because at the beginning they give you like a chart where it's like this seeds to this. And I was like, I didn't understand what that meant. I was like, how could one person have more but also less and the power structures? And like when he was
the
fighting.
Charts were very helpful eventually.
Eventually. But at the beginning, just off bat, I was like, what? What does this mean? But once I got into it, I was like, you know, that kind of makes sense. But it's also, it's a pyramid. So it's a pyramid scheme. So like, you're never going to be able to replenish. Like
every, it's an MLM.
Yeah, because every pyramid structure of like systems never end well because you can never grow. You can never grow the top. The top has to stay at a limited number. So therefore, you're going to have a very large base that eventually like was given promises to make it to the top and they can't. So then they rebel.
Well, what's interesting is there were multiple pyramids and not all of them went to the same height.
Yes. So I think that's what saved it a bit because I was like, how does this work? And then like it did make sense once like they say it's different pyramids. I really loved that each of the pyramids, if multiple from the bottom die, it affects the top. And then also like it affects the magic that's imbued or the will that's imbued in like transport systems and how they have to like take away and like redo the will as people retire because they don't want like old people having their will shuffed off like when they die. So I thought that was really interesting and like the whole transport system.
He really thought of everything.
Yeah, like it really explained like I could explain this whole magic system. I won't because we don't need that. But the fact that I can explain it fully and don't have any questions just tells you how good he did at this job.
I also appreciated that Latin numbers were used to denote someone's like, you know, Quintus so-and-so, and you knew they were like a level 5 or whatever. So you knew how powerful they were. So I really appreciated the Latin naming system for all the people so that you knew how powerful they were without having to be like, I don't remember this guy.
I mean, honestly, the world took me a little bit getting used to. I wasn't really sure how I felt about it at first because I don't tend to like worlds that are so like structured. I feel like that's part of why I like high fantasy, because they're all like in the woods and like blah blah blah, and this is like very different from that. But it really grew on me as I read. And like I said in the non-spoiler section, I really did like appreciate how unique it was and how well thought out it was. So by the end of the book, I was like vibing much more with it. I was like, okay, I understand what's happening. I did not have a ton of like Latin or Roman based knowledge outside of just like the basics, and also like interest in mythology is sort of how I learned about like Rome and Greece, like instead of the other way around. So I knew a little bit, but it's definitely something you don't need to know a ton about to get the book.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you learn because like you can tell that there's still dissent against the hierarchy, like, mm-hmm. but it's so, they're so overpowered and they've taken over the whole world that it's hard to like actually dissent, but like it's so structured at the beginning, but then you see the cracks in the structure and you have mm-hmm. like people pointing out, and that's when it gets really intriguing, is like how yes. you can really dismantle a structure that's based on conquering. And once you've right. conquered everything, what else is there to do? And that's yes. very interesting about like the three different governmental branches, like religion, Senate, and military, and having those three be the basis of power, each vying for the top. So, so interesting. My political science mind was like, yes, this is what I needed.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was good. And you had to learn all of that stuff before you got to the academy, or else you would have been super lost.
Yeah, it would have made no sense. But that was one of my favorite points of intrigue in the book, was like, what's going to happen when all the levels of government like start to fight each other? Like, I was like obsessed with that.
And all the pyramids start colliding. And
yes. I was also obsessed with the fact that he chose to frame this as like a second world where there had been a past society. There was this huge, they call it the cataclysm. And then society basically had to start over. I also like loved that. I thought it was a really smart way to frame the book, because now you're always like, they're always like in sort of the back of your mind, because Viz basically says that almost everything the society that they currently live in has now is like based off of what they could tell from like ancient ruins and all this stuff from a society before them. So yeah,
which is crazy, because you know that's what we do now with ancient Rome. So
mm-hmm. yep it felt like so creepy but cool.
Mm-hmm. And we don't know a lot about the pre-cataclysm world still, and I have a feeling we will find out more.
Book two. Yeah, that's why I'm so excited.
The one thing that was kind of left unsaid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, like it was almost a subplot, because he was supposed to run the labyrinth and they were all training to run the labyrinth, but that was such a quick moment, and then it kind of moves on because you have to tie up the loose ends of everything else. And then at the end, it leaves off this huge cliffhanger of just like the Prince of Palace being like, I'm trying to save us from a second cataclysm. Help me. And he's like, well, I'm not going to be under your thumb.
And the things that you go to like seed your will are a pre-cataclysm thing.
Yeah.
So yeah. It's like, why are you really messing with this thing? You don't actually know what it is.
Right. Like if you break it, there goes your whole society structure, because right. you don't know how it works.
And you can't recreate it.
No.
Yeah. It was wild.
So, to be seen, I'm intrigued.
Yes. Also, I loved the fact that as you discover more about the ruins and everything, you realize that the Prince of Palace has turned the school into a training ground to try to, like, run the ruins. I was like, oh my God, what the fuck? Like,
yeah. I kind of suspected it when Lanestia was saying like this is a new invention after mm-hmm. After she left, and after Old Seesaw left this or graduated the school. So I was kind of like, okay, there has to be a reason why they added it, and I bet it has to do with the Prince of Palace. But I didn't realize that it would be connected to these ruins, and it would mm-hmm. be like this whole cataclysm secondarily thing. I was like, oh,
also Lanestia, or how you say it, Lanestia. Being eyes. Blind, and then finding those crazy body things that are blind yeah. and like help him run the maze. They were definitely trying to turn her into one, and I need to know more.
Yeah, exactly. I need to know her backstory.
I was so intrigued by that the whole time. I was like, what the fuck happened to her under the mountain that like How did she get away?
Under the
Why
mountain.
Did they try to turn
Under
her one?
Or,
sorry, sorry.
Okay,
I'm coming out. That's kind of how I picture the maze. I know it's in a dome, but it's
like sort of
by
yeah.
this mountain. And so I
but yeah, you go like down into this thing.
Yes.
So
something this book does really well is it gives you a complete story where you feel like a lot of the questions are answered, but there's also enough left unanswered that you're so curious for the next book. Like, there are so many books I read where I feel like they don't hit that balance right. And I feel like they left questions unanswered that really should have been answered. And the book feels like incomplete, or it feels like there are plot holes, like without the answer. And he did it so perfect.
Yeah, because we've talked about on this podcast with a lot of the fantasy books we've read where it's just like you end on a cliffhanger just to end on a cliffhanger, or you haven't tied up like major like magic and mm-hmm. plot lines that need to be tied up in order to like proceed further on in the story. Mm-hmm. And he treads the line so well of like finishing off this book and starting the next chapter. Well, also it's like a continuing thread. So like you finish off this first year at the academy, he's done at the academy. He's going to graduate. He's the number one in his class, but mm-hmm. he has one less arm in three different dimensions. And we don't know what it means for the future.
Right. It tied mm-hmm. up everything in this story.
Yeah.
Minus the cataclysm stuff, which was very minor overall in the story. And it opens up a whole new story, which was like crazy.
Because you get the answer. You get the point of the dome and the ruins, but you don't understand how it works. And like the answer just creates 1,000 more questions. Because they're like, we copied the world. And like defeating this is basically how you make a copy with yourself to be in the new world. And I was like, I'm sorry, what the fuck? But it was so good.
And yeah, I don't actually remotely understand the end, but I'm excited.
Yeah.
All I know is he's in three different places and he's copies of himself, of
Obi,
and Chaos, and the regular
spinning.
World.
And how did, okay. So mm-hmm. I'm going to skip a question. We can come back. His father, his adopted father, Ulcissor, his brother, I knew he wasn't dead. He was not mm-hmm. dead. I knew he was not dead.
Yep.
Anyway.
I knew that the Principales didn't kill him. I was like, there's no way, like that's too convenient for him to just murder him to get ahead. Like that wouldn't make sense. Like that's not, people are much more selfish in this world and they're much more like calculating than just plain mm-hmm. murder. So this can't be just like he killed him. That's it.
Right. And the whole time the Principalis, you can tell that he's using the students and he's not really a good guy. Like he's still kind of a villain, especially because he's been willing to let the students risk their lives to try to complete the maze on his behalf. But you're also,
but he also maybe tried to complete it himself at some point.
Yeah. But then you're also sort of aware that he's not really like you kind of get the sense that he probably didn't kill Ulcissor's brother. You figure that like the situation may have been more complicated. Like you kind of become aware that he's not really the villain you expected. Mm-hmm. And basically, I mean, the cliffhanger is basically telling us that like he's morally gray and he used the students as a means to an end, but also getting to the right. end is really
there
important.
Are actually no heroes and no villains in the whole story.
No, yes. Everyone is gray. And the only person who really can see that it's everything's gray is Viz because of his history and his background. And then Calidus.
He acknowledges to continue with his plans, he also has to be gray.
Yeah.
Yeah. He says, yeah, to find the answers, there's no way to keep escaping the will system. And yeah. Okay, so let's go back to the Viz question. So what did you think about Viz at the start of the novel? He's got this hidden background. And what about his abilities plus his very important refusal to cede will?
He's a very astute teenager.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can definitely tell. And I loved the backstory scenes with his father, because you can definitely tell his father was like a very fair and just leader and like actively searched for knowledge and education and wanted the best for his people. And so you felt heart-wrenching, even though you knew that he was going to die and that he was going to be hanged and his whole family's going to be killed. You still felt really sad about it when you got to that backstory. But you can tell that his father also impressed upon his heir, like, you are going to learn that, like, there's no such thing as just like a great leader. You're not born to be a leader. No one's born to be a leader. You have to choose to be a leader, and you have to be actively reaching out and actively learning in order to be a good leader. Like, you're not just, because like this whole thing about like bloodlines deserve power is just bullshit. Right. And that's what his father's saying, even though that's their entire basis of government.
If this was like a like Katniss rags to riches,
mm-hmm,
teenager thing, I'd be like, no. But he was raised a prince and was, right, trained this way, and he's not like 14, he's like 18, so I accept it. And he's a fascinating character.
Yeah, I did like watching him like puzzle out problems. However, my one issue with the book is I do wish that like he had some more significant barriers on his way in the academy. Like, I was like, you can forgive it a lot because he admits he has a background as a prince and he was trained and educated as a prince. And so you're kind of like, okay, he does have a lot of education already that he needed. But also, like, all the kids were so fucking lazy, and like, he didn't really have any competition until he was like in the top level of the class. And I was like, I just find it hard to believe that all of these kids who have like the top education,
they were Nepo babies.
Yeah, Nepo, yeah, babies.
It does kind of make me laugh because on one hand, I was like a little disappointed because I wanted the challenges to be more formidable. But on the other hand, there were points when it really made me laugh because it's also so fucking true. Like, what are Nepo babies like? They're not the best of the best. They don't have the best work ethic. They actually don't really care because everything is going to be handed to them. And so it also kind of made sense. But, yeah, you know, sometimes it making sense is not the most exciting story.
It was, yeah, though, as soon as that one girl said, oh yeah, I went from 6 to 4 in a semester and that's impossible. And I was like, okay, Viz was just like, hold my beer. obviously going to do that and more. I did like that you did think he kind of was stuck because they froze the rankings at the end. And you're like, oh, he didn't do it. And, but of course, then, you know, things get complicated from there. So, but I did like that, like, he didn't achieve his ultimate goal the way it should have worked.
Yeah. I really liked that part that you're critiquing, Casey, like about it not being as hard, because I was obsessed with the whole academy of the whole thing. Like, I have, yes, no words. I have no comments, no nothing, no notes.
Yes.
Because Lanestia was preparing him so hard and so much that he was expecting this to be really, really hard. So he was going in with the expectations and the hunger to get ahead. But he's not surrounded by hungry people. He's surrounded by people who have grown up in privilege their entire lives, and their spot is bought in. Like, they're bought in and they're guaranteed a high ranking no matter what. Even if they're in class 7, they can still be a Sextus, which means you get a ton of will seated to you and you're super powerful. So they're like, I have no reason to achieve. And so he was shocked because he immediately in a day got out of class 7 and went to class 6. The part I loved was that the professor was super like xenophobic and hated him. And he was trying to fairly get up the system, but his adoptive father, El Cisor, basically told him, like, no, you can't just play by the rules. You have to play dirty and you have to play unfair and you have to find outs and ins. And I'm like, yes,
this is the like chess game.
Yeah.
Yep.
The chess game with B was freaking phenomenal. Yeah. And the sword fighting scenes, I was like, I mean, obviously he's an OP character because he was trained in all of these things, but I could believe it because he was a prince of a small island country and the last to be invaded by this very big, bad, scary hierarchy. Mm-hmm. So his father knew he had to learn everything in order to survive.
Well, and I liked him that, despite them saying you got to play a little dirty, he remained really loyal to Calidius, and Eden. Even I was like, oh, okay, that was an, I didn't, I'm pronouncing all these names wrong. I remember I got to the back of the book and saw the pronunciations, was like, ah, shit.
Yeah. But I listened to the audiobook Aiden, I believe is his name.
Okay.
And then Calidus.
I was saying Aiden, actually.
Yeah. I just liked that he was loyal to them no matter what. And he like acknowledged that both of them should have been higher ranking, but just had these like, Eden was basically, they were like basically racist against him from whatever conquered village he was from. And Calidus had all these, you know, ulterior things going on. And he didn't like, he saw the good in the good people and didn't care that they were lower ranking.
Yeah. Which I really do love that it kind of drove home the point that like they had been led to believe and like the propaganda of the hierarchy is like, you know, it's a meritocracy, but in reality, and you can see it in all of these super privileged kids because like, especially I think there's a scene with Belly where Viz is like, oh, but Calidus should be way higher. And then Belly was like, okay, then why isn't he higher? And it just kind of shows you, right? Like their privilege is so blinding that they really believe that the hierarchy works the way it's supposed to. When Viz, because he's been the victim of the hierarchy, knows that it is really experiences all the same ills of greed and privilege that, you know, any other society experiences.
Well, because then they use him as an excuse of like, well, look, you got here, you were a gutter rat, and now you're here kind of thing, like the token, like charity right. case. And that's how they use it of like, look, you can even get into the academy. And it's like, no, he's a prince in disguise.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And he was what, Copernicus or whatever? Because of the thing at the Colosseum. So he had a leg up only because of that, really.
Yeah.
Right.
He was smart and he could fight and he didn't have the Sapa didn't steal all of his will. So that's how they knew that he was gifted.
Right. Okay. So the Angui, this like rebel force, which is another thing I really liked. You guys know I'm a slut for a rebel force that is actually itself quite corrupt. And that is definitely the case. The Angui are trying to fight the hierarchy. They want the hierarchy to end. But in doing so, they create their own hierarchy and they seed will and they create. I mean, they're essentially a terrorist organization. You know, they literally commit acts of terror in the book.
And let me tell you, it was terror.
Yeah.
The whole people whole turning into pink dust thing. I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Gruesome.
Scene was so visual. I was like, stop, please.
Oh yeah, it was the stepping in liquid, you know, running down the stairs. I'm like, oh my, you don't need, okay, I get it.
Well, and especially the fact that it was his mentor and friend from Seuss, and he was like, I don't even recognize you, like why would you join the Anguis? And he's just like, you have to realize you got to fight them with the powers that they have in order to beat them. And like Viz was like, that's not true, like you don't have to do this, these people are innocent. And he's like, no, they're none of them are innocent. That's when you knew like, oh boy, you could get away with so much. Like,
killed children.
Yeah
But his argument was that none of the children are innocent because they benefit from the hierarchy. But I mean, you can make logic out of you can make logic of killing anyone if you have that in your brain, which
a
is
crazy. Person can argue anything.
Yes. Yeah. And it is kind of scary because, like, he makes a decent argument out of it. Like, if you forget that he just murdered a bunch of children, then you can be like, I mean, yeah, all of these people did voluntarily, like, sign up to be part of the hierarchy.
Right. And you're like, oh, this is so gross. They're, like, doing this sea battle and making these people give their lives. And then he then kills all the other people. And you're like, well.
Spectators.
Yeah. Yeah. You're like,
It also leaves so many open questions because we didn't get really answered about what power he was using. And even like the hierarchy in Cadian society doesn't really know what he did or how he has that power. But I'm going to bet because it's Seuss that Viz has this power.
Right. Because they allegedly created it in Seuss.
I don't know. I think it might have something to do with whatever he finds at the end of the maze.
That's what I was thinking.
I don't think the students are the only people running the maze, as we kind of find out.
Yeah.
Right. Because they mention a breach in the island. So there's sort of like implications.
There's that one guy, too, who meets with Relucia and then finds Viz later. I don't know. Yeah. It gets very confusing. But there are other people doing things.
Right.
They shouldn't be able to do. And I think it all has to do with what we'll find out in the next book.
Yes. But yeah. So the rebel group is terrible.
Ben is married to his adopted dad.
Relucia and that twist, I kind of saw it coming, but it still shocked me when it happened. I was like, oh boy.
I was really shocked by that one. Like, that was one of the ones that I did not see coming.
No. Like, she shot him. Full stop.
Yeah. Full stop. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was like, this girl, this wife is definitely absent for some reason. She's chilling and she's going to come into play somehow. And then when she came into play, I was like, oh, that's not what I guessed.
Yeah, I had expected her to be more of an agent for the hierarchy. And I was wondering if maybe she was working with religion somehow. So, like, I thought her role was going to be really, like, complicated in some way. But I did not see the anguis, or however you say it, thing coming.
Anguis, I believe.
Anguis.
I was just calling it the Angus in my head.
The Angus. Okay, I do want to say, though, Eden or Aiden or however you say it, he was my favorite character.
So I loved
him. I loved him so much.
Yeah, I want to learn more about him. Like, well, I feel like we still don't know his whole story. We get a good amount of it by the end, but... Mm-hmm.
Well, and we know why he... Well, we kind of know why he turned down being part mm-hmm. of the main tournament at the end, because mm-hmm. he didn't want to feel like he had to betray Viz, because he probably was offered something that he couldn't refuse to help his family or to get out of his situation, because he is technically a traitor. That is now he's going through a lot because he feels like morally terrible for not killing himself again. Basically,
they pulled him out of a sapper and stuck him on this place. It's crazy.
Yeah.
And he feels like he's betraying his people and knows that he's training to be used against them and basically to be a figurehead to make them submit to the hierarchy. So, yeah, he has his own shit going on.
I freaking loved the scene where they were making fun of the professor in his language and Viz had to translate it and be like, no, he's telling you that, like, we're very sorry for what we did.
When they ran the maze in his language and then they're like, you can't use that. I was like, oh, that was so good, though.
Yeah, it was. That scene made me smile so much.
Yes.
Also, Calidus is a great example of using a character for lore building in a way that it's not cheap.
Yep.
Like, Calidus was a three-dimensional, well-rounded character who made important contributions to the story, but because of his position in society, he also knew things and confirmed things for Viz that the story really needed. Mm-hmm. And so I thought that was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, he's the son of the most powerful person in the government. Of course he knows shit.
Yes. Before it gets to the really action-y part, there's a summer holiday basically, and they're like, oh, we're gonna go to my dad's vacation home, and it's on the island that Viz grew up on and was destroyed, and is he ends up staying in his old castle basically. What did you think about the little trip to Seuss?
It broke my heart and mended it back together. Because at the beginning he talks about how Seuss has changed and they've destroyed its beauty and added all these hierarchy symbols and stuff like that, but it's still Seuss. And then he sees that his father's advisor is now a sextus and is the keeper of the house there. And then Aiden was just like, oh yeah, this is only our summer home. We come here sometimes kind of thing. It's just like, well, this stings. That sucks. But then he has these really sweet connections with the people of Seuss who are like, we still support you and whatever you do, we will stand behind you.
Well, and then when he has that secret meeting with his father's old advisor, that's when you're kind of healed again, because he's like, I am doing what I can to protect our people. And I have saved all of the stuff that matters, and I'm doing my best, even if it made me the villain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Viz also gets some much needed relief from constantly feeling shame that he's not doing more for his people. and like constantly not knowing because, okay, the lost prince princess trope is a little overused in fantasy, but it's fine. What makes me mad is when they're expected to just like crawl themselves to like the top of a society and then like lead a revolution somehow. Like that stuff actually makes me really mad. And so I really liked the way his like countrymen responded, where they were like, we understand, like we want you to do what you can, but like we're not living in any, you know, false hopes or narrative that like you're going to be the knight in shining armor that saves us. Like,
yeah, and they're also fine. They're just getting technology advances.
Yeah. They're like, do we like seating will? Do we want the system or these rulers? No. But like, we all do what we can. You know, we have to be realistic.
They play on the hierarchy's like egos and pride to make it seem like they're on their side, but it's actually not the case. And they're like kind of, they do their own little rebellion in a world where they can't have rebellion, which is really, it's really smart. And you can tell that like they were a very well-ruled country before because they were well-prepared to basically perform for the hierarchy to make it seem like, oh yeah, we're totally fine. We're on your side.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We get back and the action begins. And then the rest of the book is like a whirlwind. So they freeze the class three rankings and they decide to do the normal tournament. And it's like, oh, it's something different. But there's usually kind of like this usual way it goes. And it does not go that way this time. And they have to bring in other people. And Viz, of course, chooses his buddies to bring with him, and they're all offered something to like, so it's really like these people they've chosen from the lower classes could still finish on top or offered something else. Mm-hmm. And it throws everything into chaos, except it seems like that Viridius, right? Yeah, Viridius knows and is hoping some of these people will sneak off to try and run the maze.
Yes.
And everyone dies.
So we love an author who is not afraid of killing their beloved characters, and he certainly did not hold back.
Heartbroken, I thought he was going to save him.
But I also, Catherine has in our notes, finally a book with the balls to kill off a main and beloved character.
Yeah, no, as soon as you said that, I was like, you literally took the words right out of my one sheet.
But like best character in the book, yes.
Yeah, like the character you absolutely loved the most and soul crushed when he died. But I was like, it's refreshing because just keeping him would have defeated the book.
Yeah, it managed like, no one got off scot-free. Viz lost a whole ass arm, like
from zombies or something.
Yeah, I don't know what those were.
Yeah, from like the weird bodies remnants that now guard the maze. Yeah.
And the whole competition was infiltrated.
Mm-hmm. By the Anguis. Yeah. No, maybe, I did not see that coming.
Maybe not them. Maybe some other kind of faction here.
Yeah.
People that might have similar powers to, you know, the other stuff we talked about. Anyway, that, yeah, was very, did not see coming. And then everyone just being like dead. They killed like all the other third years or level threes or whatever.
Yeah, except for like two.
Emissa, that bitch.
And the idol. Idol. I don't know.
Yeah. Though I will say, I still don't totally understand why Emissa stabbed him. Like,
so
I don't either.
I kind of think I get it. So she was in league with Viridius.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she knows more about what Viridius's motives are. And she knew that.
I thought Belly was in with Viridius.
Yeah, no, they both were. And so she knew that, she knew about the maze and she knew about the after effects of it. And his injuries were similar to that of a person who had ran the maze. And so I think she killed him thinking that he would become like a remnant or some sort of like something bad would have happened if he stayed alive.
Mercy killing?
Yes, I think it was she was because she was crying before she did it.
It's bad timing if it was a mercy killing.
Yeah. Very bad timing. So because I'm thinking Verdius did indeed kill Alcesor's brother, but it was for reasons that are more altruistic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like making sure he existed on one plane and not the other or whatever.
Or saving the world from him.
Hmm. I'm feeling complicated. I mean, I'm sure they'll explain it in book two, but there's this that one scene where Viridius is like, your blood is tainted now. And I was like, what?
So I think Amisa honestly believed her blood was tainted. His blood was tainted, so he could not live.
But I'm also, I mean, we just don't know enough, no. You know, because I'm like, but then what happens if your blood is tainted? Like, Viz seems fine.
Well, I think Amisa is definitely, she's blinded by Viridius and like is probably too trusting of him. And yeah. Viz is a lot more complicated than that and doesn't believe mm-hmm. anyone in power, which is a very good way of thinking in this novel. And I'm thinking Viz is different because he is a Seuss prince who has never ceded will. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking that he will survive this copying in three places where others could not.
Because they also say, like, this is another thing that they mention and it doesn't really get addressed again. But it's like that Viridius's interest in students who have never ceded has been growing. So, like, at a certain point, I'm assuming that will come back up as an important detail. And so maybe that is what it takes. Like, if you've never ceded will, then you can survive the Oppidium thing.
Obadiah, Lucanium, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I think, I'm guessing Belly didn't cede will either. And that's why Viridius had her run the maze and not Amisa.
She was also just smart.
Well, yeah. She was a good maze runner as well. But yeah.
Okay. So what about Viz choosing to work under Calidus's father?
Fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Really
smart.
Did not
see it coming.
No.
Genius. Yeah.
Well, because
the third path.
Well, I was like, because this whole intrigue, because we haven't really talked about it, but military overhears military and Seuss is like literally funding the Anguish so that they can mm-hmm. keep their funding going. Yeah. Like, as in, like, they can keep their power because, you know, why do you need a military department if you've taken over the whole planet?
Yeah.
Which is a very smart way of thinking about it and, like, adds that political intrigue.
Mm-hmm.
I did not, because, like, when they came in and they're like, you have to choose now, after he woke up, I was like, Jesus, give the man a rest. Like, let him think about it. But then he's, like, so quick-witted and was like, I trust Calidus. I trust his father. And he's the most powerful man in the hierarchy. Like,
which
I can
will make him end up being like a Cortis, probably.
Probably.
Which is crazy. He'll outrank Ulcesar now.
Yeah. Well, thank God. Ulcesar is one of those people where you're not really sure where he's going to come down on the spectrum. And it was not in a good place. Like,
well, and technically,
he was fully like, why didn't you let him?
He
is blinded by rage. Yes.
Yeah.
And the fact that, like, Viz does not know in that plane that Ulcesar's brother is technically alive in another plane. So it's all kind of like convoluted of like, how do you explain to him that like, yeah, no, I didn't find any information on your brother or his death.
Right. We have a lot to learn.
Yes. Cause it seems like you have to maintain some kind of connection with your original body or else you become too separated. Like it sounds like it gets complicated. But okay.
I do have great news. The author posts updates like every few months on how writing is going. So the last update was in March. And it says he's hoping to hand in The Strength of the Few in May. So hopefully we could get it by like the end of the year, maybe.
But that also seems says, a little fast.
I know. It's also currently sitting at 15,000 more words than the first book. And that's pre-edits, but he writes these little updates.
Yeah, well, that's good. I mean, now I have Yellowface in my head and they talk about how long it takes like to publish after turning in the final copy. So a girl can dream, but we'll see.
15,000 more words than the first one. Jeez.
Pre-edits.
Yeah, but that's still long.
255,000 words.
Oh my God.
I mean, I'm excited, but also, geez.
Yeah, I cannot imagine writing a book that long.
No.
We only ever read books that long.
Yeah.
I don't have enough words to write a book that long.
Yeah. Well, I think that's it.
In summary, we will be reading the second book, even if we don't review it on the pod.
Yeah. Do you guys have book recommendations? I will definitely stick with Babel. I do also just feel like a desire to throw out Percy Jackson.
That's a good one.
I feel like it's more of a, obviously more heavy traditional mythology, but like teen version of this.
I'm going to throw out the Atlas Six because the dark academia, very distrustful society or hierarchy system and an unknown magical component.
I don't know. The Maze Runner.
You're really stuck on this maze thing.
I mean, it's really what I pictured in my head a bit during that one scene. Yeah. And that shard stuff that chases you. I was like, I've seen this before. Not literally, but that's pretty much what was in my head because of seeing Maze Runner's movie. I don't know. That's dystopian too. Totally different dystopian, but I'm gonna stick with that one.
All right.
That's shorter.
Not bad. Okay.
I did see someone call The Will of the Many YA, and I was like, just because it's a teenager doesn't mean it's YA.
And yeah, just because there's no sex doesn't mean it's YA.
Agreed. I'm like, guys, come on. Just because it's not a dirty, filthy book doesn't mean it's for children.
Like, as a teenager, I do not think I could have read this and enjoyed it.
No.
No, it would have taken a while.
Also, this book is like just very advanced in like the way you see the world and like the experiences that you need to have to understand how power works. Like I
feel like as a teenager, I really was like on a binary of like good, evil, and then like nothing in between. Mm-hmm. And that's what I wanted, was I wanted good, evil, good fight, evil.
Yeah, I really wasn't jaded enough as a teenager to read this book.
Yeah. Like, this is so much convoluted gray area shit that I wouldn't have enjoyed as a teenager.
Exactly. Yeah. But now that I work in Congress, this is what I like.
Do you feel like life imitates art?
Perhaps, yeah.
Casey's just an Octavia slumming it at the Capitol.
I really am giving these people way too much of my life force.
Wow, this really hit close to home.
Okay. Well, these are just our opinions. We want you to disagree. We hope if you do, you'll send us a message. And also rate and review our podcast. You can find us at Busy Girls Pod pretty much everywhere.
Yeah. And with that, I'm Catherine.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Casey. Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.